Al-Anon meeting, October the 12th, 1962, Friday afternoon.
If you will all rise, we will open the meeting now with a serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I have been asked to make one announcement. In the back of the room, the Al-Anons have a guest register. Will all Al-Anons, both from within Amarillo and from outside of Amarillo, please register with us? I understand that we have in our midst our state delegate, Ms. Arbutus O'Neill. Will you please rise? We're real glad to have you. Welcome to the 15th annual Top of Texas Roundup. The Al-Anon family groups wish to say thank you to the Roundup Committee for allowing us to open this meeting this year. We're very flattered. It was left to the Al-Anon groups to select the mistress of ceremonies. And believe me, they did not select me for my ability. There are many in there that can do better than I. I was selected, I think, for my big mouth. I got the job because I like to talk. And especially do I like to talk about AA. In case you didn't know, now, I want you to know that these thoughts that I'm about to put forth are not original. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship designed and administered by a bunch of ex-drunks whose only qualification for membership is that they can't hold their liquor and they don't want to learn how. There are no rules, dues, or fees. No nothing that any sensible organization seems to require. At meetings, the speakers start on one subject and end up talking about something entirely different, concluding by saying, "I don't really know anything about the program except that it works." The groups are always broke, but they always seem to have money. They're always losing members, but they always seem to grow. They claim AA is a selfish program, but always seem to be doing things for others. Every group passes laws, rules, edicts, and pronouncements, which everybody blithely ignores. Members who disagree with anything are privileged to walk out in a huff, quitting forever, only to return as though nothing had ever happened, and to be greeted accordingly. Nothing is ever planned more than 24 hours at a time. Yet great projects are born and survive magnificently. Nothing in AA is according to Hall. How can it survive? Perhaps it is because we have learned to laugh at ourselves. God made man, God made laughter. Perhaps he is pleased with our poor efforts and makes everything run right no matter who pushes the wrong button. Maybe he is pleased not with our perfection but with our sincerity. Maybe he is pleased because we're trying to be nobody but ourselves. We don't know how, but it works. And the members keep receiving dividend checks from their AA investment. And this brings us to the Al-Anon family groups, the first child of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's now another child, the Al-Ateen groups, growing rapidly. The only requirement for membership in the Al-Anon family group is not a desire to stop drinking. Those of us who drank it all gave it up as a lost cause a long time ago. But a sincere interest in the problem of alcoholism. We try to help each other understand alcoholism. Some of our alcoholics are stone sober. Some are still stoned. No matter, there is something here for all of us. Most of us were half nuts before we ever heard of AA or the family group. Neurotic is a word we like to use. Sometimes even a stronger word. Psychotic. Do you know the difference in a psychotic and a neurotic? A psychotic thinks 2 and 2 are 5. A neurotic knows that 2 and 2 are 4, but it bothers him. By studying and practicing the 12 steps of AA, we feel that we make some progress toward this understanding of alcoholism, of the alcoholic individually, and above all, of ourselves. However, we didn't hire the hall this afternoon for you to listen to me. In our midst, we have a celebrity. Elsa was here 5 years ago. She was here in 1957. And those of us who heard her then know what a treat we have in store. Those who didn't can look forward to a most pleasant surprise. I give you now, from Laguna Beach, California, Mrs. Elsa Chamberlain.
Thank you, Anne. And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, my very dear friends from Texas and environs. I imagine there are some from out of state also. But I feel at home here as I do in California because there is something about this program, both AA and Al-Anon, that makes us friends whenever we meet. And it only takes about 2 minutes to know and feel that you've known our people forever. Somehow or other, we speak the same language. I suppose, for those of you who have not heard me before, that it might be wise for me to give you just a little rundown on what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I had a girl, an alcoholic girl, say one time that she couldn't imagine anything more boring than to listen to a non-alcoholic tell what she used to be like, what happened, and what she's like now. So if any of you get too bored, I'll try to make it brief. Just feel perfectly free to get up and leave if you so choose. You see, I have finally gotten to the place, after long years of trying, where I don't take myself quite so seriously as I used to. And finally, after so long a time, I can laugh at myself like the alcoholic does. And to me, this is a real step forward because I was inclined to take myself very seriously for many, many years. But I was an only child and one who was raised in a family who were so afraid that they would spoil me that they leaned over backwards. They were so strict. So I grew up thinking that I didn't have a brain in my head, that I couldn't make a decision of my own. And when I finally got to high school, being a very shy and introverted person, I got the reputation at Hollywood High, of all places, of being the biggest snob in school because I was afraid to speak to anyone on the school grounds unless they spoke to me first. This gives you a little picture of what I started out as. I had been a very athletic girl, a rather large girl. I think, if I remember rightly, I weighed 162 when I was 15, and not an ounce of it was fat. It was all muscle. And I can remember, as well as if it were yesterday, the first evening gown I ever possessed. And I was standing in front of the mirror, fixing my hair, and all of a sudden I happened to catch sight of my arm here. And I had a muscle like a man's. You see, I had always, all my life, enjoyed the games that boys played. I played football with them and basketball with them, but swimming was my big sport. And I was at home and comfortable when I was doing these things. Now, my family, my mother being a professional singer, had trained me in music, and I was a fairly good pianist and had a fairly good singing voice, but I was scared to death. And one day at school, one of the girls said, I'm going in to try out for a play this year. Why don't you come along and try out, too? And I said, oh, dear, no, I couldn't possibly do that. But she worked on me for a while, and finally I said, well, I'll go try. And wonders of wonders, I got the part that I tried out for. And from then on, grease paint was in my nostrils, and nothing else would do, but I was going to be an actress. Well, the thing that this did for me was something that I will bless to my dying day, because it gave me the ability to put on a front. Now, I've heard you alcoholics talk about the front that you put on to the world. Don't sell us non-alcoholics short. Those of us who marry alcoholics are so much like you that it's a little ridiculous. I find in myself almost everything that the alcoholic speaks of. And it's not easy to get rid of, believe me. But this work gave me the ability to stand up in front of an audience and act as though I were secure when I was most insecure. It gave me the ability to appear at ease when I was shaking from the top of my head to the soles of my feet, as I am doing right at this moment. And no one from then on ever knew how scared I was. When I was in my first year in college, I met a young man and fell head over heels in love. And when I say head over heels, I mean head over heels. Nothing would do then but that I make a decision after a couple of years went by of going with this young man, that I would drop everything that I had envisioned that I was going to do. At least I had enough sense left to know that I had a choice to make, and I made it. And it wasn't a difficult choice, because I was nuts about this guy. I recognized in this young man something that I had not seen in the other boys that I ran around with. There was a potential there that was quite wonderful that I could see. My father couldn't see it, however, because he tried every way in the world to keep me from marrying this man. But I was determined, and I married him. And life was very wonderful for some time. Love, you know, is a wonderful thing. But those of us who marry somehow or other carry in our minds a picture of what these people are going to become and of what they essentially are. And we are perfectionists too, you know. And we expect them to turn out the way we know they should. And when they don't, there's quite a problem. I don't believe that there is anything that is quite so heartbreaking as to watch someone you love very dearly and whose potential you recognize gradually by degrees go to pieces before your very eyes. And you seem completely and utterly helpless to do anything about it. This doesn't mean that you don't try. I guess I made every mistake in the book. I don't believe that I ever had any tolerance for people who drank too much, because I had been raised in a family who did not drink. I ran around with young people who did not drink. In fact, if a boy took you to a dance or came to a party with liquor on his breath, he was immediately ostracized. So, you see, I did not have a background for living with an alcoholic. I fought it every way that I could think of. I poured the bottles down the sink. I hid them. I railed and I ranted and I cried and I pled. I said, why, how can you do this to me? If you loved me, you couldn't possibly do this to me. Why can't you stand up and be a man? Why can't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? You see, I didn't know of the disease of alcoholism. This was many years ago and long before Alcoholics Anonymous was very well known. I did not know of it myself until 1941. And my husband and I, this last June, celebrated our 37th wedding anniversary, so you can see that it was many years before, after he got sober, that I found out what the disease of alcoholism really is and what the family of the alcoholic has to do in order to be able to live with it. Alcoholism is a family disease. It affects everyone connected with it. And unless you have some knowledge of how to deal with it, you get sicker and sicker and sicker. Anne spoke before I got up about the neurotic tendencies of the non-alcoholic who lives with an alcoholic. I would say that it goes even further than that. I have no quarrel whatsoever with that second step, because that means as much to me as it does to the alcoholic. I was nuts, and I know it now, because nothing that I did ever worked. And I tried the same things over and over and over again for about 15 long years, and none of them ever got a result, but I kept on trying. Now, you'd have thought that I would have learned along there somewhere that the attitudes and actions that I was performing were wrong, and that maybe somewhere I might be able to find a right answer. But I thought that he was doing this just to be ornery. I thought he was so filled with self-will that he was determined that he was going to drink in spite of me. Something happens to the non-alcoholic during these years. Even though you have been a person in your own right before this happens, something happens during these years that you cease to be a person anymore. The alcoholic has a way, and those of you who are alcoholics here will forgive me for saying this, but I think you'll admit that it is true. See, now I understand it, then I didn't. But the alcoholic has a way of tearing his wife down, or the husband down, whichever case it may be, to such a point that you feel that you are no longer worth anything. You become a nothing. I know now why the alcoholic does this, and it doesn't hurt anymore. Because I know that in the alcoholic's own self-hatred and self-condemnation, he has to pull the other fellow down in order to build himself up a little bit so that he can live and face himself. And when our girls in Al-Anon or our men in Al-Anon learn that this is the reason that they do this, it no longer hurts so badly. But the time finally came. You see, I'd been on the fence for many, many years, not having been able to make a decision when I was young. It still was impossible for me to make a decision. So for years and years and years, I said, shall I leave him or shall I stay? Is it better to have a drunken father or no father at all? But I couldn't decide, because I had no training to earn my own living. And I was scared. I was scared spitless. I had two children and my mother to support. And I knew that the only thing that I was capable of doing was maybe clerking in a store. Well, you can't make enough to support four people clerking in a store. It was even frightening to me to even think about going to have an interview for a job. This is bad business, you know, when you can't speak for yourself. So I think that I just gritted my teeth and went along. But the time finally came when I knew, because of some of the feelings that I had had and some of the action that I had taken, that I was going to end up in Patton long before he did. Because there were occasions, and this is the truth, there were occasions when if I had had an instrument to my hand, I think I would have beaten his brains out. And I remember so well hearing one gal say at an Al-Anon meeting that she used to look around the corner of the door at her husband lying stupefied in bed and say, "Die." Just die and get out of my life, you know? Well, there were times when I felt this way too. Maybe, perhaps he would die in one of these alcoholic convulsions. And perhaps I could find happiness somewhere else. But as all things do, the time came when I was forced into a decision. I had to do something about me. I started to business school to try to learn some way to earn my own living. And this, I think, maybe some of you have heard Chuck tell about, because I think it's one of the things that helped push him over the border. I don't know for sure, but I think it is. I was practice typing at home. And in our house, I was practicing in the dinette, which had a wooden floor, and he was in bed in the bedroom, and the sound carried through very dramatically and drove him, I think, almost nuts, because he used to dog me about this and say, "Do you have to? Do you have to? Do you have to? I can't stand the noise. Peck, 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 peck." But he tells me now that he knew that I was pecking myself right out of the house. And that's exactly what I was doing. But I don't think that I accomplished a great deal along that line, because I had had the crazy idea that because I played the piano that my hands were trained and that it would be very easy for me to learn to type. Well, it wasn't that easy, I can promise you, because when you are shaking from head to toe, and your stomach is doing somersaults. You see, I know a little about what you alcoholics speak of when you say the pain, the pain. I had the pain too, and I think every non-alcoholic who lives with alcoholism has the pain too. And that is why we come to Al-Anon, to get rid of the pain. And there we do. We do. But anywho, it was not long after this that my husband came to AA, and life changed very dramatically indeed. And you know, it's a funny thing. Here I had become a nothing during the drinking years, and even though the relief was so great, and the joy was so great, and the peace was so great, I still remained a nothing. Because, as you know, when an alcoholic comes into AA and grows on the program, if we do not grow too, we are left trailing way, way behind. Way, way behind. And it behooves those of us of the family to do something very definite about ourselves. We learn, for instance, that we are completely and utterly powerless over the alcoholic, or anyone else for that matter. Release is one of the first things that we learn in Al-Anon. To be able to give the other fellow the right to live his own life, to learn, to make his own mistakes, to become and be himself. This is not an easy thing to do, and it was something that I had to learn to do, not only with my husband, but with my friends, and especially with my children. Release. But release with love. Many people have asked in our meetings, what is the difference between release and rejection? And this is just my own opinion, but this is the way it appears to me. When you release with love, it's like holding with open hands. You love, but you leave the other fellow free to make his own mistakes and learn thereby. It is not an easy thing to do because our whole nature says, I want to protect, I want to protect. But we find that it is to their detriment when we protect. Now, rejection to me is letting go with resentment, with bitterness, with hatred. To me, this is the difference. I heard my husband say one time that he was sure, and I hope I'm not stealing this from his talk on Sunday, but I'm going to say it anyway, because it paints a very vivid picture to me. He said, I am sure that God loved me just as much when I was in the gutter as he does now that I am sober. But he loved me enough to let me make my own mistakes. And this is what I mean when I say release. There are many, many things to be learned, both before the alcoholic sobers up and after he sobers up. Most of us come into Al-Anon saying, if only my husband would be sober, all our troubles would be over. Oh. Oh, no, this is not true, because people do not change overnight. We do not change overnight. It's a learning process for all of us. It's tremendous when you can take these 12 steps, which are a way of life, and apply them to yourself. People are people. Human beings are human beings. And I guess we will always have problems. I had one hit me in the face just the other day when I was sailing along just as pretty as it can be. Something had happened that just knocked me for a loop. And you know something? In 2 minutes, I was right back to the same old pattern of thinking. And it took me 2 whole days to get myself straightened out. It's this easy, and it requires constant vigilance, believe me. But now I become aware more quickly when I am starting to have thoughts that I do not like to entertain. Little resentments, little things. And I keep pushing them to the back of my mind and saying, well, I just won't think about that. And this is the greatest mistake I think we can make, because they build and build and build, and all of a sudden something happens and you blow your top. And this is exactly what happened to me. There were a lot of little things that were totally and completely unimportant that I had been pushing to the back of my mind and not getting rid of. If I had gotten rid of each one as it came along, I would not have been thrown by this other thing that happened. And I realize that now. I had allowed myself to get to the point where I felt again that I was not getting my just due, that I wasn't getting my proper respect. And this is a killer, believe me. This expectancy. I said a while ago that we have a pattern in our minds of what we think our mate should be and how he should act and how he should perform. There's tremendous potential. Why doesn't he fulfill it? Expectancy. And it's not a good thing. It'll drag you around by the nose, believe me. I'm beginning now to learn not to expect anything from anybody. My concern is now, what do I feel? How do I think? What can I do for the other fellow? How is it with me? Am I happy? Am I at peace? Or am I troubled or disturbed about something? And if I am troubled or disturbed, and I am not comfortable with me, I have to get busy and do something about it. I have learned along the way to say to myself, what is important? What is important? And I have to say to myself, there is nothing that is important except that you be at peace. Because if I am not at peace with myself, how in heaven's name can I help anybody else? It's as simple as that. There's another thing that I have learned that to me is tremendously important, and that is that I have had to, in just the last 2 years, and believe me, this has taken me a long time to get to this point, because I've been around this program for almost 17 years now, and about 12 of it in Al-Anon, and you can see what a slow learner I am. But when we moved out of Beverly Hills to Laguna Beach, it suddenly became very apparent to me, this thing that I spoke of a while ago, that I had become a shadow of the great Chamberlain. Now this was a very easy way to live. It was very simple and easy to use his words, his thoughts, to parrot him, to go along behind like a little puppy dog. But I had the strangest feeling about myself that I didn't amount to a darn. And it became very necessary for me to get back my own personal integrity, to be able to stand on my own 2 feet, to make my own decisions, to think my own thoughts, and along with this, to not find it necessary to make the other fellow agree with me. This is one of the most important things I've ever learned. It used to be very important to me that if I disagreed with you, I had to argue with you and make you change your mind because I was always right. And this is no good either. But now I find that I can have my own ideas, I can think my own thoughts, and I can express them, even though badly. And it is no longer necessary for me to make you believe as I believe. This is a wonderful freedom, believe me, because then I can sit down and talk and not become emotionally involved in the problem. One of the things that I hear most often in Al-Anon is we have no communication. We can't communicate. Well, perhaps the reason that the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic cannot communicate is that each one is trying to make the other one believe that they are wrong and he's right, or he's wrong and she's right. We're almost like two immovable objects. Why isn't it possible for us to sit down and talk about principles and leave the personality out of it? I find that in this work, that if I allow myself to become emotionally involved in someone else's problem, I have absolutely ruined myself as far as being of any help to these people, because then I cannot stand a long way off and look at the problem without any emotion and maybe say a few things that might be of some help. We deal so much with tragedy that if we allow ourselves to become involved in the problem that we deal with, we get into such a state of emotionalism ourselves that we are of no value, no value at all. I would like to say a little bit about the non-alcoholic who comes to Al-Anon before her husband quits drinking, or the husband who comes to Al-Anon before his wife stops drinking. We have many men in Al-Anon now. Since the first step of our program says we are powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable, the first thing that a gal or a guy learns in Al-Anon is that we are completely powerless over our alcoholic, that there is absolutely nothing that we can do for them except to completely release them to find their own answers in their own time. And that it is very necessary for our own sanity that we get busy doing something about ourselves and our own state of thinking and our own state of being. And this is what the Al-Anon program is all about. And the same steps are used, and they work just the same way with us as they do with the alcoholic, if we apply them. As I said a while back, the non-alcoholic comes into Al-Anon thinking that if her husband would just sober up, everything would be all right. Or she comes wondering how she can get her alcoholic sober. And she remains to find out that she can't. Then she remains to find that if she applies these steps to herself and starts changing herself and her attitudes, both toward the alcoholic and toward everything else, that she can learn to live in peace and serenity in spite of the alcoholic. And I have seen hundreds and hundreds of people do this and become very successful at it and keep a spirit of helpfulness and serenity and joy in the household that her children will follow without any difficulty whatsoever. It's amazing what happens around you when you find your own peace. And I have heard it said many, many times that perhaps this is the greatest opportunity that we as non-alcoholics will ever have to find a way to live peacefully, happily, and at one with our fellow men. We have the same feeling of fellowship in Al-Anon that the alcoholic has in AA. We understand each other as you do the alcoholic. Perhaps that is why we can help the non-alcoholic and the alcoholic cannot. Because in turning it around the other way, we can't help the alcoholic. But the alcoholic can, because he understands his problem. We learn that we have a choice, those of us who live with a practicing alcoholic, we have a choice. We can stay or we can leave. This is our decision. But it is not up to anyone in Al-Anon to make that decision for the person. This is a personal decision that we have no business in. We have no business either in family disputes or family problems. The only thing that we can do is to say, we had this experience, we had that experience, we did thus and so was the result. And if you will practice these principles, perhaps you will find there will be a change in the household. And on many, many occasions, we have seen it may take anywhere from 2 to 3 to 5 or 6 years for the alcoholic finally to come to AA. But he finally does in most cases. And then this presents even a greater problem, because the wife has, or the husband has, been practicing these principles for a good many years. And when the alcoholic then finally comes to AA, if we don't watch out, we are a little holier than thou, because we know so much more about it than he or she does, which is not as it should be either. I have seen some of the most magnificent things happen in Al-Anon. You talk of miracles in AA. We have just as many in Al-Anon, I believe. I would like to say something about the lack of the necessity to be a crutch for the alcoholic. And I would like to tell you a story of an experience that we had in the Beverly Hills group in California that I think points up a very, very wonderful thing on release. We had 3 mothers in our group at one time. It was rather an unusual situation. All 3 of them were widows, and all 3 had been left with enough money to take care of them for the rest of their days. And all 3 of them had sons that were alcoholics. When they came into our Beverly Hills group, they had spent every nickel that they possessed getting these boys out of trouble, bailing them out of jail, picking up bad checks, setting them up in business, doing everything that they thought a mother should do to protect her child. And all 3 of the boys were still drinking, and the money was all gone. All 3 of these middle-aged women had to go to work. Nothing had been accomplished. In fact, I think they came to see that it was highly possible that they had contributed to their son's delinquency by putting off the inevitable. Why should they sober up as long as they had a mother to take care of them? Why should they? One of the boys died a suicide shortly after that. One of the others drank a bottle of cleaning fluid thinking it was vodka, and that killed him. And I don't know what's happened to the other boy. But it's highly possible that if those mothers had known what we know now about the release of the alcoholic, they say in AA so often, pull the rug out from under them, pull the rug out from under them. It sounds cruel. And I've had mothers say to me, how could I treat my child that way? I wouldn't turn a dog out in the street. But they do not realize that they are doing something that is prolonging the illness, and that this is not real love. And I go back to the story that I told you, that God loves us enough, I believe, to let us make our own mistakes. Therefore, as human mothers and wives and friends, why can't we see that in protecting and babying and pampering, that all we do is prolong the disease and the inevitable moment of surrender, and that the only thing that we can do is to do something for ourselves so that when the time comes that the alcoholic finally comes to the point where he is willing to give up and does something about it, why in the world should we remain as sick as we were? At least he will have a normal, happy, peaceful family to come back into, even though the family has split up in the meantime. And this happens so often. Because you see, I was getting a divorce when my husband came to AA. I had given up. I thought there was no hope. But if I am speaking the truth, I will have to say this, that if it were necessary to go through what we went through in order to find what we have found for 17 long years, good years, happy years, then I would say it has all been worth it, every bit of it. Because I believe now that it was as necessary for me as it was for my husband. Because I had a great deal to learn also. And it has taken some pretty rough times to make me learn it. But I think now I am finally on the way to becoming an individual again. And I believe, I hope that Chuck will concur with me, that we now have more mutual respect for each other than we have ever had before. Because if it is true that the alcoholic dislikes weakness in himself and weakness in the other fellow, even though they try to make us weak in order to build themselves up, they do not respect us nor like us when we become weak. By this I do not mean that you stand up and fight for your own rights. This is not what I mean. I mean that I am an individual with the right to my own ideas, my own thinking, my own life, providing I am not doing any harm to anyone else or anything, that I am doing the best I can with what I have this day. I have to say to myself, I am what I am, and that's all I am. And if it isn't good enough, it's just too bad. That's all there is there. I'm doing the best I can. And the old approval bit has just about gone out the window. And I am almost free. And it's a wonderful way to feel. To be able to love for free, to live for free, to do what you do for free, and enjoy life as you go along. Thank you very much.